Thank you for listening today to our podcast here at Word of Life. We're delighted that you tuned in, and I pray that while you hear us talk, you hear the Holy Spirit speak. I know God's got a big plan for you. We're excited to be a part of that plan. Hopefully, we will see you sometime soon, maybe even this weekend. Until then, we pray you have a wonderful, wonderful week. Let's open up our Bibles to the book of Mark today. We're going to look at Mark chapter 11 and verse number 24, Mark chapter 11. We're going to talk about Thanksgiving today, and not just the holiday, but for each one of us to embrace a spirit of Thanksgiving. So what we're getting at today is why give thanks? Why do we as individuals need to be thankful? The first reason is this. Number one, they'll put it up on the screens. Prayer presents the problem. Thanksgiving receives the answer. In prayer, you ask. In thanksgiving, you receive. Prayer presents the problem. Thanksgiving receives the answer. Now, the first part of this message, I'm just going to be clear, is very, very technical. And I know that when it comes to technical things, people love those things so much. And I want to encourage you, stick with me. Like, stick with me. Because if you can understand what I'm about to teach you, I know it's practical, I know it's simple, I know it's not flashy, but if you can understand and begin to apply what I am teaching you, friend, I promise you, you are going to begin to see more and more answers to your prayers. Let's look at it. Mark chapter 11 and verse number 24. We'll read from there over into verse 25, and it will also be on the screens. Mark chapter 11, verse number 24. Let me get there. It says this, "Therefore, I say unto you, what things soever you desire, if you have," and I know so many people are on an electronical device, but if you have like a pen or something, you can write the number one by desire. "What things soever you desire," number one. "Two, when you pray." "Three, believe that you received them." "Four, you will have them." "And five, and when you stand praying, forgive." "Therefore," Jesus said, how do we know he said it? It's in red. They made it easy for us. "Therefore, I say unto you, whatsoever things you desire, when you pray, believe that you receive them, and you will have them. And when you stand praying, forgive," he said. Now, most people think this is how God works. When I need something, I find out what I need, and I come to him, and I ask, and if he wants to give it, well, he gives it. If he doesn't want to give it, well, it was a sign that, you know, if he didn't give it, he didn't want to give it, and so, you know, prayer, you know, is what it is. Prayer and receiving answers to it is so much more than having a desire and asking God for that desire. That's a big part of it. It's the first two steps. But Jesus did not say, if you have a desire and you pray for it, you're gonna get it. He didn't say that. He said, no. "Whatsoever things you desire, when you pray, believe that you receive them, then you shall have them, and make sure the whole thing is covered in love and forgiveness, because faith, it works by love." If I need healing, it's not just, well, I need healing, I desire healing, so let me come down to the altar and let people, you know, pray and ask God for healing, and then God will take it from there. No, that's not what Jesus said. If I want to receive an answer to my prayer, I have to have a desire, I have to give voice to that desire and pray, but after I pray, I need to notice verse 24, they'll put it up, verse 24 on the screens. "Whatsoever things you desire when you pray, believe that you receive them, and then you will have them." Now notice, when do I believe that I receive? When I pray, not when I get them. I can't wait to believe to receive healing when I receive healing. No, I believe I received healing when I prayed, whether I felt healed or not. I don't believe that I receive when I finally see the miracle. No, I believe that I received when I prayed, even if it doesn't look like I got the miracle.
Now, there's no way to believe that you receive without thanksgiving. Like, you can't do it. If you believed you got healing, it doesn't mean that you have to come back, or it does mean that you come back and pray and ask for healing again. Now, if you come down and I need healing, so I come down, I ask for healing. Well, what scriptures are we standing on? And it's like, well, Peter 2:24, by the stripes of Jesus, I am healed. Okay, great, we've got our scripture. So, Father, in Jesus' name, you said in your word that Jesus took stripes on his back that I may be healed. Awesome. So we thank you, Father, for your healing in our bodies. Okay, great, that's the prayer of faith. Well, in that moment, you've got a choice. You can just leave it all up to God, or you can do what Jesus said to do in his word. And he said, here's what I need you to do. At that moment, I need you to believe that you received when you got it. If I gave you $100 and you came back and said, can I have the $100? It's like, I already gave you the $100. Well, Pastor Joel, can I have the $100? I already gave you the $100. If I gave you $100, what's the only thing left to do? The only proper thing left to do, it would be to give thanks. If you came and said, can I have $100? I pulled out my wallet and gave you the $100 and you believed you received the $100. You wouldn't ask for it again. You wouldn't come back and, please, Pastor Joel, please, can I have you? Can I, the $100 is in your hand, man. It's right there. Please, Pastor Joel, if you love me, you would give it. No, the $100, I've given it to you. Just take it. What's the appropriate response? Thank you. With God, he asks us to live by faith. Without faith, it is absolutely impossible to please him. And here's what faith does. It believes when I ask, I got it. That if he heard me, it's as good as mine, which means I don't have to beg him anymore. I don't have to ask 15 more times. I don't have to have a prayer chain and have 30 other people ask. No, if I'm in faith, I believe that God has heard me. I believe that he heard me when I prayed, so I believe that I received when I prayed. Therefore, the only thing left for me to do is to give him thanks. We know to give him thanks after we've got it, but here Jesus is saying, I need you to give thanks before you receive it. A number of years ago, I was sitting in Bible school, and the Bible school that I went to was just an amazing experience for me. And the first year, they basically teach you doctrine. Now, I was blessed in that I grew up in a church like this one that, you know, has good Bible teaching in it and all those types of things. And I actually grew up not in a church like this one. I grew up in this church. This is the church I grew up in. There wasn't a whole lot of things that I learned that was new, but I was learning them at an age where I was more mature so that I could appreciate them. And the director of the Bible school got up and told a story that I'd heard many times, but for whatever reason, it clicked in my heart this day. When he was born with an incurable blood disease and a heart defect. So the doctors told his parents, he'll never make it past 18. Like, he'll die probably long before then, but he definitely will not live past the age of 18 years old. So sure enough, the older that he got, he couldn't run, he couldn't play, like shortness of breath and all these types of things because he had an incurable blood disease and a heart condition. So around age 13, he was bedridden, like physically could not get out of bed. Like, it wasn't like, I don't feel well today, I think I'll lay down. It's like, no, I can't get out of bed. So they didn't have iPads and, you know, cable and all these other things that we have today. They just had, like, books and things, and even those were in short supply. So he just got the Bible. And as a young guy, teenager, bedridden, he just would get the Bible and he would read it. Well, he didn't hear anything about faith or healing or those types of things. He just thought, well, it's just up to God. You know, God and his sovereignty, if he wants to heal me, he'll heal me. And if he doesn't want to heal me, well, he won't heal me and I'll go to heaven and that'll be that. But it's entirely in God's hands. And one day he was reading and he came across the story of the woman with the issue of blood. And he noticed something. Jesus did not knock on her door and say, it's my sovereign will to heal you today and heal her. That she got out of her house, heard about Jesus, came behind him. He's walking away from her, came behind him, touched the hem of his garment, When she touched it, she felt in her body that she was made whole of her blood condition. Jesus felt the power go out of his body, so much so that he turned about in the press and said, "Who touched me?" Seeing the woman, fearing and trembling, she begins to confess what she did. Like, I heard you were a healer. I believed in that healing. I came and I touched the hem of his garment, for I said that when I touch the hem of your garment, I shall be made whole. And Jesus looked at this woman. He said something that changed his life forever, and I pray it changes yours. This is what Jesus said. "Daughter, your faith hath made you whole." And this minister said when he read that, it changed his life, because immediately it dawned on him, now wait a minute, if her faith made her whole, my faith can make me whole. He didn't say, "Daughter, my sovereignty made you whole." He didn't say, "Daughter, my goodness made you whole." He didn't say, "My power made you whole." He said, "Daughter, my faith hath made you whole." Now here's the interesting thing about Jesus. If you believe in Jesus, then you got to believe his words when he said this: "If you've seen me, you've seen the Father." If you want to know how God operates, he said, just look at me. And in this situation, this woman, if she would have waited on any of those things I just mentioned, power, sovereignty, or whatever, she'd have lived and died in that house and never seen the goodness of God in her life. She made a decision to take her healing. And I'm telling you, on that day, this young kid laying on his bed had this revelation. If her faith made her whole, my faith can make me whole. I'm going to believe God for my healing. So he called in other pastors and other ministers and showed them that verse. And they said, "Well, all that's passed away with," and, you know, all of these other types of things, just trying to explain it away. But that wasn't good enough for him. It's like, no, God's not a respecter of persons. And if he did that for her, then he must do the same thing for me. I'm going to believe God for my healing. So he began to believe as far as he knew. So he began to pray and ask God for healing. Like, I believe that you can heal. You healed her. Her faith made her whole. I'm asking you by faith for my healing. And every day he would just ask. He would ask for healing every single day. The more he asked, so the sicker he got. So the sicker he got, the more frustrated he got. And every day he's getting more frustrated because he's like, wait a minute, does the Bible not work? Like, she had her faith make her whole. I'm trying to use my faith to make me whole, but the more I pray and the more I ask, I'm just getting sicker, and I don't understand why God is not listening to me. Have you ever felt that way before? It's like, I'm praying for this, but it looks like it's not clicking. Like, I'm asking, but it looks like it's not working. Like, I don't understand. Is it broken? Am I broken? What is going on here? And so he's reading, and he just keeps reading the Bible, and one day he gets to Mark chapter 11. In verse number 24. And he sees this verse of scripture. "Whatsoever things you desire when you pray," check, "believe that you receive them and you shall have them." And immediately when he saw that, he told the Lord, "I believe I am in faith." And the Lord spoke to his heart and said, "You believe as far as you know." As far as you know, you believe, just in his heart. And when he read verse 24, he saw it. "I have been waiting to believe that I received when I received." Meaning, when I finally felt better, then I'll receive feeling better. And he saw in verse 24, Jesus didn't say that. He said, "When you pray, believe that you received, then you will have it." So he thought, well, the only way I could do that would be to give thanks like I'm already healed. So instead of praying from that day forward for healing, he began to give thanks on his bed that God would do what he said he would do. He began to give thanks to God for being his healer, for healing his body. And one day it clicked on him even further that if I really believed that I was healed, I would begin to put action to it. And he said, I picked up my legs physically because he said they didn't have the strength in them to move themselves. I picked them up, threw them off the end of the bed, and I made a decision to just stand up as much as I could. And he said, I knew my legs wouldn't be able to sustain me. But as I pressed myself off that bed, he said, it felt like honey falling from heaven. Just hit the top of my head, went down all the way to my legs. And I lost all feeling in my legs because they hadn't had any movement. So he said, it hurt. But he said, it hurt so bad, but felt so right. He said, I could feel that healing in my legs. And I took a step for the first time in months. He said, I walked all the way to the front of that house. He said, when my grandfather saw me, he said, has the dead risen? He was healed that day. He was healed that day. Jesus said, whatsoever things you desire when you pray, believe that you receive them. Now, if you've got it, you need to give thanks after you've got it. But here Jesus is saying, thanksgiving is not just something we do after we have received something. Thanksgiving is something that we do even before we've gotten it, believing that God will honor his word. I told the story a couple of months ago how my son, you know, had to do a story on a character at, you know, a real life history lesson person, a character from real life history. So he was last to pick. And so he came home and told me, I was last, I only had three people to pick from. And out of that, he picked somebody. And I said, well, who were the other options? And he said, one was Milton Hershey. I'm like, you should have picked Milton Hershey. Because I said, I read a book on the Hershey Chocolate Factory a long time ago. And I was fascinated by his story and some of the things he did to build his business. I said, I would have taken you to Hershey, Pennsylvania. So anyway, of course, the next day, he got his teacher to switch. And got him to give him Milton Hershey. So he's like, Dad, guess what? I'm like, what? He's like, I got Milton Hershey. I'm like, and? He's like, you said. If I got Milton Hershey, you would have taken me to Hershey, Pennsylvania. So anyway, I have told him I am going. So Wednesday, or Friday night, someone comes up and they ask me, have you taken him yet? Because I told that story. Have you taken him yet? I'm like, no, I haven't taken him yet because our schedules haven't aligned up. But I said, I am going to take him. We're just looking for the right time. We're just looking for, but I am. After I said that, I realized my son has never once come back and asked me for that because he knows I'm taking him. He knows I'm taking him. And friend, I want you to know God is a better father than I am. And faith pleases him. And if you believe he's really going to do what he has told you he is going to do and what you have prayed for, the only logical next step for me is to give thanks unto my Father for him being as good as I know he really is. The second reason to give thanks, number two, they'll put it up on the screen. Second reason to give thanks is pride will take the credit. Humility will give thanks. I'm eliminating the word pride or proud from my vocabulary. I'm serious. The more I study this issue, the more I see I don't want to have anything to do with pride. Like even in referencing my employees or kids, it's like I'm trying to not use the word proud. I'm proud of you. I'm filled with pride over you. Because proud denotes I did something to get you there. This is why even God, when he spoke over Jesus, he didn't use the word, I'm proud of you and I love you. You know what he said? You are my beloved son in whom I am well pleased. Why? Because if I say I am pleased with you, it denotes you did something. Therefore, you get the credit. I want to encourage you, wherever there is pride, there is always going to be a fall. It is only a matter of time before there is a fall when I enter into pride. Humility will humble itself under the mighty hand of God. Humility will give thanks. It'll point the credit to others. It'll point the credit to God. Humility gives thanks. Pride takes the credit. We see an example of this in the book of Daniel. In Daniel chapter 4, there's this king. He's a good man. His name is Nebuchadnezzar. And he has his issues, but don't we all? He's working with God, though, to kind of try to do things God's way. And God has blessed him because of this. So he's got this kingdom. Everything's great, awesome. And one day he has this dream. And in the dream, he sees this huge tree. And it's a beautiful tree. It's bringing forth all of this fruit and buds, and all of these animals and people are underneath the tree just receiving safety. And some of you are like that, right? Like some of you, you have enough beauty and power in your life that that safety and that provision even comes into the lives of others. Like there's others who have shade in your life because of the weight of your life is casting that shade and helping them. That's a blessing. And this is Nebuchadnezzar. It's not just he's got this beautiful life, but his beautiful life is providing safety and shade for others. And an angel comes down to watch the tree in the dream. He sees this tree, and the angel's watching it. And the angel commands that the tree be cut down. The tree is cut down, dragged away. But he says, make sure you protect the stump and the roots because growth is going to come back from it. And so Nebuchadnezzar sees this dream and he wakes up and he's asking for the interpretation of it. No one can give it. So he's like, I definitely know the guy for this. So he calls Daniel in. Daniel comes into the story. He tells Daniel the dream. And as soon as he tells it to him, Daniel has the interpretation. He's like, Nebuchadnezzar, you're the tree. You are the tree. God has blessed you. God has given you an amazing life. He's made it beautiful. And out of this life, you're also providing safety and shelter for others. He says, basically, the gist of it is, what the Lord is looking for is humility. If you'll be humble, you'll be okay. This dream is a warning, because God will warn you through dreams. He'll warn you a lot of ways. The more stubborn you get, the more persistent he'll get with his warnings. He'll pull on your heart. So he sees something in Nebuchadnezzar's future where pride is about to enter into his life, and so God is giving him a dream to warn him. Well, a year later, Nebuchadnezzar completely forgets about the dream, and watch what happens. At the end of 12 months, he walked into the palace of the kingdom of Babylon, and the king spoke and said, is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? Does anyone see a common theme there? Yes. While the word was in the king's mouth, there fell a voice from heaven saying, O King Nebuchadnezzar, to thee it is spoken, the kingdom is departed from you. And they shall drive thee from men. Your dwelling shall be with the beasts of the field. They shall make thee to eat grass as oxen, and seven times shall pass over thee, until thou knowest that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. Look at this next phrase. And giveth it to whomsoever he will. The same hour was the thing fulfilled upon Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men, and he did eat grass as oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till the hairs were grown like eagle's feathers, and his nails were like bird's claws. At the end of days, I, Nebuchadnezzar, lifted up my eyes into heaven. My understanding returned unto me, and I blessed the Most High God. And I praised and honored him that lives forever, whose dominion is an everlasting dominion, and his kingdom is from generation to generation. At that moment, he got his kingdom back. Now, there are stories like that in Scripture. There's a New Testament example of this as well. But this story just kind of summed it up nicely for me. I never, ever want to feel like I deserve what I have in my life, so much so to the extent that I begin to take the credit for it. And this is a heart issue more than it's a word issue. But Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth's going to leak. Your mouth, it'll always reveal what's in your heart. And when you walk around taking the credit for stuff, when you walk around with entitlement or feeling like you deserve it, you are always going to be walking in a measure of pride. And I want you to know this is something that each and every one of us have to guard our hearts against, especially when life gets to going good. The truth of the matter is, there's not one person in this room that wants what they deserve. I deserve it. Do you really want to get what you deserve? Because we deserved hell, right? Like, we deserved, man, I tell you what, if it wasn't for the patience of God, if it wasn't for the forgiveness of the Father, if it wasn't for the grace that comes from Jesus, the favor that God poured out on me to get me out of my mess again and again and again and again, none of us would be here. Not a one of us would be here, But God has been gracious to us. He has been patient with us. He has given us far more than we ever deserved. He has been good in our life. Friend, I'm telling you, don't ever fall into that trap where you begin to take the credit. Constantly begin to point to God and others. Constantly keep that spirit of humility where you are the one who is giving thanks rather than the one who is taking the credit. And thirdly, we'll end with this. Number three, thanksgiving increases your capacity to receive. Thanksgiving increases your capacity to receive. I took my son yesterday to the monster trucks. Anybody else go to the monster trucks? Nobody else. Wow, must have been a terrible event. So I heard someone clap. Good for you. I was there too yesterday at the 1 o'clock show. And I'm there and it's just me and my youngest son. And man, I tell you what, he is all over some monster trucks. So of course, when you walk in through any entrance, they have like the monster trucks you can buy, like the little like Hot Wheels monster trucks and a big one, all those types of things. And we walk over to the big one, and like as soon as we walk in, he's like, "Daddy, can I have it?" I'm like, "Yes, son." I love this kid. So we walk up, and I get him like a small one, and he's so grateful for it. Like just, oh, like eat your heart out grateful. Like, "Oh, thank you, Daddy." He's like, "Can I play?" And he's playing with it, and like all throughout, you know. And so during the Monster Truck Show, he picks out his favorite, like the favorite of the real trucks. And he doesn't ask for it again, but when we're walking out, he just shows me the truck that he has, which is not the monster truck that was his favorite in the show. And he's like, "Thank you so much, Dad." Like, just gushy things. Like, just, "Oh, my, melts your heart out things." So you know what I did? How many of you know what I did? I got him that one, right? I got him the other one. On the flip side of that, have you ever blessed somebody and they treated it like it was nothing? Have you ever blessed somebody and they took it for granted or lightly esteemed it? Have you ever blessed somebody and they didn't even acknowledge that you blessed them? Now, question, does that open up their capacity to receive more from you? No, it actually diminishes it. Do you know that's not just a human thing, that's a God thing? I said, that's a God thing. God does not give to every person equally. I know, that's a, woo, it's like, that's a doctrinal thing. I promise you, read Matthew chapter 25. He does not give to everyone equally. You can do that for homework, for extra credit. In Matthew 25, you see how God gives to people. He gives to them according to their ability to handle what he's given. You know how he determines that ability? Not what you say you will do if he gives you more. He determines that ability by placing something little in your hands and seeing what you do with it. To one he gave five, he said. To another one he gave two. To another one he gave one. The one who got five took what was in his hands and made it the best it could be. Jesus came to him and said, "You've been faithful with that which is little. Now I give you even more. Enter thou into the joy of the Lord." So he gave him more based off of the little he already placed in his hands. Do you know everybody in this room's got placed something in your hands? You've got kids in your hands, family in your hands, clothes in your hands, church in your hands, a community in your hands, a nation in your hands. You've got health in your hands. You've got a job in your hands. And it might not even be the job that you want, but you got a job in your hands. Maybe it's at Baskin Robbins, or maybe it's working for a church, or maybe it's a corporation, but God's given you a title. He's given you a position. And we just read in Daniel, he can give whatever to whomever. That promotion, it doesn't come from man. Promotion comes from God. And God comes and says, like, "Everybody, I've given something in your hands. And I want to see what you're going to do with it." And I'm telling you, one of the big things he's looking to see what you do with it is if you lightly esteem it and complain about it, or if you give thanks for it. You remember the story when Jesus fed the 5,000? He's like, "We need food to feed them. We need food to get this show on the road." And so a little boy brings his lunch. But as soon as it gets in the disciples' hands, they look at what's in their hands. And you know what they do? They say, "But what is this among so many?" Like, what is this? They lightly esteem it. They look at what's in their hands and they say, "It's not enough. It's not what we want. It's not what we need." And so vocally, they begin to complain about it. Like, what is this among so many? And it stayed exactly that way. Jesus said, "Bring it to me." It gets in Jesus' hands. He takes what is not enough. He lifts it up to the Father and doesn't even pray. He just gives thanks for it. And as he blesses what is in his hands that is not enough, he receives the miracle of seeing it be more than enough, and it feeds everybody there. It's a spiritual principle. Years ago, the praise and worship team can come out on the stage. As we're going to close with Thanksgiving. Years ago, I took over this church, and it was not this. It was falling apart because of my exceptional leadership. It was bad, like, woo, bad. And I began to look at other ministries, other churches, other pastors. You've probably never done this before, especially not with social media. Began to look at everybody else's, and it's like, man, I wish what I had what was in their hands. Golly, I'd love for my church to have that, those lights and those screens. And woo, man, I'd love to have that growth. And I'd see, you know, other pastors. And I'd go to other conferences, and it's like packed out. And then I'd come in mine, and it's like, where is everybody? I knew where they were. They were at some other place. Like, bad. So you know what it did? It led me over into a sin of the heart. See, now here's the issue with this. A sin of the flesh we can see. They're much easier to correct because other people can see it. You know, you get out there getting drunk and all those types of things, other people will see it. They can help point you back because they can see it. You know, adultery or some of these other things, it's a sin of the flesh. So with that, other people can see it. Anything that's a sin of the flesh, other people can see. Those are the easy ones. Those are the easy ones to correct because other people can see it. It's not just you who knows about it. Other people begin to see it. And so it can help make course corrections faster. Sins of the heart, though, are much, much harder. It's things like unforgiveness. Do you know you can be staring someone in the eye and have complete sin in your heart towards that person and they don't even know it? But other things can come in, like jealousy, envy, a spirit of complaining, like the children of Israel walking through the wilderness. They have a miracle every single day. What is in their hands is a miracle every day. Bread is raining from heaven. But they take what is in their hands and they just, in Egypt, we had melons. You were slaves in Egypt. They couldn't see it though. Because they just saw what everybody else had. They didn't see the miracle right in front of them. It cost them the promised land. So here in my life, I begin to develop these issues. Do you have any issues like that? We have a lady on our staff. Her name is Myria. Oh, she's one of my favorite people. Her and her husband, Terry, came into our church years ago when I first started pastoring, ironically enough. And Myria has like this amazing professional background. And she came on staff. And as soon as she came on staff, I'm like, I should be working for you. Like, I don't understand the dynamics here, but like, I'm just gonna get out of your way. So she has like brought so much organization to our ministry and just manuals and all these types of things. But I was doing some communication training with people who wanted to be on stage, and I give them things to preach on, and I told them, I want you to give me a 3 to 5 minute message on healing. And Myria came and she presented her case on healing. About the man who was laid by the pool of Bethesda. You know the story. For years, an angel would come down and stir the waters, and the first one to get in the waters would be healed. And this guy was lame from the waist down. He couldn't move. And so he's been laying by this pool for 30-some-odd years waiting to get in the water, but someone always gets him before him. And Jesus walks up to him that day and says, do you want to be healed? And he's like immediately complaining. He's like, I would love to be healed, but someone always gets in before me. And Jesus is like, but your miracle is standing right in front of you. Like, do you want to be well? He says, yes, Lord, I do. He takes up his bed and walks, and he's healed that day. Now, here's what's interesting. I never noticed this until she brought it out in this lesson. And I told her on Friday, I'm like, I'm taking your story, and I'm going to use it to close my message. I'm taking it. But because I'm teaching on what I'm teaching on, I will give you the credit. Come on, somebody. I will mention you by name. I learned from Nebuchadnezzar, man. You're not gonna find me with feathers. No, sir. So she mentioned that in this example, that Jesus later found the man. He later found him. He said, come here. He came. He said, here's what I want you to do though. Go and sin no more, lest a worse thing come on you. Go and sin no more, meaning up until that point, his life had been filled with sin. So go and sin no more. Now this is interesting. She brought up like, what was he doing that was sin? Like, right, he's lame by a pool for 38 years, like waiting for the stirring of the waters. Like, if there was ever a time where he would have like an opportunity to sin, it would be like after this moment. What was his sin? I'll tell you what it was. For 38 years, watching someone else get the miracle, watching someone else get blessed, watching someone else get healed, and wondering why it is not happening to me. It was a sin of the heart. It was a sin of ingratitude. So it was a sin of hardness, of not seeing the Christ that was there right in front of him. And the same thing had happened to me. And I know, like years ago, one day I heard this minister preach, Bob Harrison. I really am closing. Bob Harrison, he's talking about business. He was saying there was an apartment complex in the city that he was living in that was doing all this type of advertisement to try to get new tenants in the apartment complex because this guy just took it over, and no one was coming. They're doing all this advertisement to try to get something new in the apartment complex, but no one is coming. So one day the owner switched tactics, and instead of trying to get something new, he decided to take care of what he already had. So the same money he was spending on advertisement, he put back into the apartment complex with carpet and new windows and things to beautify it. And as soon as he did, occupancy shot up through the roof. He got the new. And I saw that in my life, that's what I had been doing. Like, people were leaving the church. So it's like, we got to get more people here. And I'm frustrated with all the people. And like, what is going on? Like, why are these people staying away? And why are they leaving? And like, all I'm trying to do is get new people. And finally, when I heard that example, I realized that the sin of comparison, the sin of ingratitude had ensnared my heart. And all I could see what was in my hands is what was wrong. And I was missing the miracle that was right in front of me. That band of people had stayed with a 19 and 20-year-old pastor to love him, support him, to help him, to be with him. And I wasn't even seeing the miracle that was right in front of me. And I began, instead of focusing on who wasn't there, to focus on who was, to give thanks, to tell him how much I loved him, to tell God how pleased I was with him and the people that he had given me. Friend, I'm telling you, it opened up the capacity of this church to receive even more when I got that sin of ingratitude and comparison and envy out of my heart. So today, I don't know about you, I want to give some thanks. I want to give thanks for all God has done. I want to give thanks for all he is doing. I want to give thanks for not giving me what I deserve, for being patient with me, for being kind to me, for being generous to me, for being great to me. Oh, and if you're with me, stand up all over this place. Let's end with thanksgiving.